Okay, everybody can settle. Set everything to silent. Vibrate.
Oh, yeah.
Vibrating silence.
Play a song for your guy. He's recording a song and he forgot to turn his phone off. He just like loses his shit. He kept it all on the tape, which is great.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. We're about to change lives, Chris. We're about to change lives. Okay, so yeah, let's start the podcast.
Let's do it.
The audacity of this pitch.
The audacity of this pitch has been brought to you by Diversify IT at Duke University. So today, we're going to talk about what is the audacity of this pitch? Like, what is this podcast about? What are we trying to do? What are we trying to talk about? You know, what is our overall goal? So, you know, I'd like to talk a bit about, like, you know, how this came to be. So Chris, who is on the Diversify IT Communications subcommittee with me, actually came up with the idea for, you know, a podcast. And so we met and we talked about how we would flesh it out and what it was going to be. And so, Chris, tell us a bit about, like, what inspired you to want to do this.
Sure. Well, first off, it was probably the first and only time I talked on that subcommittee, so Brandon was actually listening to me. But no, I am an avid podcast listener. Everything from very casual stuff to more meaningful things, and just I've been looking for a way to contribute to this very important cause, and I feel like I have been listening too much, and this was an opportunity to actually be a voice and or have a voice in something that actually means something. So I mentioned it to you almost casually, and you got even more excited about it than I did, which was great, and you've sort of kept me going on this, because as you know, I mean, we both work for Duke University, and we can get sucked into our work job, you know, our work life, and then all of a sudden these things get, you know, on the back burner, and you've kept us going. So turn it back to you on, you know, where do you see us going with from here?
Yeah, I mean, I see us going a lot of places. I mean, one of the main reasons why I was so inspired by this suggestion was, you know, your initial proposition about putting something together that brought, you know, everybody around the table, because that's what Diversify IT is about, right? It's about, you know, bringing our respective experiences to the table and sharing, you know, our different views. But as we talk about our differences, it's very, very easy to forget our commonalities. And one of the unifying forces that we have in this world is music. And so, you know, I thought it would be really, really interesting for us to, you know, explore our aural similarities here at Duke and build bridges and connections that way. So, yeah, you know, kudos, Chris, for this idea, and I'm stoked to help build it out. So we didn't just want to talk about, I mean, it's very easy to say this podcast is, you know, about connecting people through music. That's like one component of it. Or one thing significant that stood out in regard to what we were doing is the examination of resistance, the examination of, you know, protest and how music, you know, is used as a vehicle for change. And it quickly became apparent to both of us that we wouldn't be able to just focus on one episode. One episode wouldn't do the subject matter justice. And so it slowly metastasized into the whole podcast focusing on examining resistance through different lenses, through different genres, through different, you know, socio-political orientations. And I thought that was a really, really cool a way to gain some insight into how people think.
Yeah. And to me, the other part of this that we discussed is, you know, I'm not an artist. In fact, the other thing that inspired me was your presentation to Diversify IT and some of the challenges you faced. And I've said it to you, and I'll say it many times in this podcast. You know, I've had a very privileged life, very deeply, you know, in my mind at least, committed to change, but I've never done anything to help create change. And this is still probably a really small step, but it's an important one for me. But, you know, listening to music has inspired me, which is, I know, pathetic compared to all the other artists out there and everything. But it's, you know, to have a chance to talk through, you know, new music, or, you know, I'm an historian by trade, not a really good one, which is why I'm in the, you know, higher education administration field. But I, you know, I was listening to another podcast talking about, you know, the glaring absence of protest music and alternative rock these days. And I was like, well, where is that? Because, I mean, this is some of the most challenging times we've ever faced and most frustrating times. So where's that music that is inspiring people? And I listen to a lot of, you know, relatively obscure stuff, and it's not popular, but I'm inspired by people who are willing, who aren't popular and not really striving to be popular, but want to get their message out there, you know, regardless what the cost is going to be. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk about. And that includes some people who are a little bit more popular and still willing to pay the price to get a message out there, to take a stand. And, you know, I say it, you know, far too many times. You know, to me, this is my first step in trying to make a difference. And I appreciate what you and others in Diversify IT have done to be patient with me and also to encourage my involvement. So thank you.
I'm glad you're here. It's our different experiences and our different identities that allow us to be, you know, effective agents of change. There's a perspective that I have and an experience that I have that, you know, definitely guides, you know, how I communicate and interact with people, but I don't have access to certain spaces that you do. And how you come about, you know, enacting change, your path is one that, you know, I wouldn't be able to walk. But someone that we reach with this podcast may be able to say, you know, if Chris is able to do it, you know, I'm able to do it too. They may look at me and say, well, I'm not, you know, a black, you know, 43-year-old, you know, activist with this much experience. So, you know, there's no need for me to try to even, you know, enter this discussion. But by having your perspective and utilizing your background, your privilege, your connections and whatnot, and then, you know, focusing that through this lens of how Chris experiences and how Chris was transformed by music, hopefully will, you know, impact someone else that's out there. So that's one main reason why I know you downplay, you know, your background and say, you know, I haven't done this, I haven't done that or whatever, but I don't feel like there's any small roles, and I'm happy that you're here, dude.
Cool. Thanks,
I'm so
man.
Happy that you're here.
And I appreciate you having me.
Cool. So that being said, I mean, the format of this is pretty much, well, for this first episode, we're just getting to know one another, and we're just going to share our personal experiences as it pertains to some of the musical tracks that we like, you know, so we're just getting to know each other, you know, instead of over a beer, you know, we're getting to know each other over a playlist or two. So I wanted to focus on, and I think that's going to be a running through line for this podcast, but like, you know, intimate personal connections to music, you know, what music has inspired individuals to do, you know, through their anecdotal experiences. So it's not some general, you know, free for all where we're just saying, you know, this song is awesome because, you know, it sounds like this or inspires like, no, I mean, like we all have personal experiences that connect us through music. And so for my first selection, because we decided we're going to select different songs that were significant to us. For my first selection, I actually chose Dead Prez. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. And the lyric that stood out was, one thing about music is when it hits, you feel no pain.
One thing about music, when it hit, you feel no pain. White folks say it controls your brain. I know better than that. That's game, man. We ready for that. Two soldiers head of the pack. Matter of fact, who got the gat? And where my army at? Rather attack and not react.
Now, as I was researching that lyric, come to find out that lyric was not exclusive to Dead Prez. Dead Prez actually took that lyric from Bob Marley's Trench Town Rock. And I thought I found that connection to be remarkable in and of itself, not simply because of the fact that, you know, they, you know, took Bob Marley's lyrics. I mean, Bob Marley's lyrics and music has been repurposed throughout the ages and whatnot. But the political messaging of Bob Marley and the political messaging of Dead Prez, you know, became intertwined and reinforced the narrative that we're trying to convey right here, is that you know, music connects, music does hit, music does, you know, make us look at things differently. And for me, the main reason why I went after the Dead Press song is Bigger Than Hip Hop is it came to me at a very, very pivotal point in my own personal life when I was in college at Winston-Salem State. My mother had passed, you know, I was busy struggling with identity and where my place was, you know, in the world. You know, I grew up Black in the Midwest, and my first experience, in regard to Pan-Africanism and, you know, the experiences of the diaspora and, you know, what was my role in saving the Black race and all these other crazy responsibilities that I took upon myself because, you know, I'm now enlightened, right? You know, now, you know, I got to get political. I got to fight, you know, I got to fight for the motherland. I've never been to Africa. I didn't know shit. But, you know, you get caught up in that. And as you're caught up in that, like, you know, for any college kid, you go all the way to the extreme. Like, and, you know, given I wasn't wearing an afro and dashiki and everything or whatever, but, you know, I became conscious. And it's that same consciousness that, you know, Bob Marley was advocating for. But then you dial it back and you start to think about, okay, you know, I'm conscious, but I need to be pragmatic. I need to be realistic about how I go about attaining these goals, how I go about connecting with the people around me. And, you know, music has been a really, really fundamental aspect of building that connection, you know, throughout my life. And I'll talk about it a little bit more later on when I talk about my second song. But yeah, like, you know, the music hit me. I did not feel pain. I connected with people as a result of that music hitting me. So that's it, you know. Bob Marley, the Dead Press.
One good thing about music, when it hits you, you feel no pain. Whoa, whoa, I say one good thing about music, when it hits you, you feel no pain. Hit me with music.
Well, and I told my staff and my staff meeting last week that I was going to do this podcast and a little bit of the idea of, you know, protest songs. And one of my favorite people in the office is like, you got to do Bob Marley. And I'm like, well, great. Brandon just trumped me. So you're going to be the popular one in my office. I went a little bit different direction, but same thing, sort of going back to my roots. I mean, so much of what we are in early part of our life is what we were introduced to, what our family believed in, and starting to question and carve your own path that becomes the important part. So I went with a number of lyrics from a band called the Drive-By Truckers and their more recent song, What It Means, which was a purposeful turn for them towards more political music over the last couple albums. But the lines are, if you say it wasn't racial when they shot him in his tracks, well, I guess that means that you ain't Black. It means that you ain't Black. And it continues on with Barack Obama won, and you can choose where to eat, but you don't see too many white kids lying bleeding on the street.
And if you say it wasn't racial when they shot him in his tracks, well, I guess that means that you ain't Black. It means that you ain't Black. Barack Obama won, and you can choose where to eat. You don't see too many white kids lying bleeding on the street.
Not pulling any punches with those lyrics. But what that immediately is made me think about is growing up white in the Midwest, very white community, probably a pretty racist household that I grew up in from my family living down in the South, and words that didn't mean anything to me and they were just thrown around. But I knew right away that they were wrong, so that wasn't ever an issue with me. It's just going through my life and questioning all these assumptions that had been conveyed on to me to become the person that I wanted to be. So on the surface, I looked like a very liberal person, but underneath, I still had these, you know, quick reactions. Mm-hmm. And then the story the turning point for me. It was probably about 30 years ago now. I was, you know, this is unfortunately a very common story now, but wasn't as common then, or at least it wasn't as much on the news. Visiting friends in Chicago, I think folks were preparing lunch or whatever. I'm watching the TV. And there's a story about a young African-American kid, 13, 14, 15, I don't remember the age, who'd been shot in the back and killed by the police. And they had two people on. A spokesperson for the police department, very calm, cool, collected, describing, you know, that this person had created a, you know, had ran from the police, had committed a crime, whatever the story was.
Yeah.
Basically saying he deserved it. And then they showed this kid's mom, who was hysterical, and it's almost like they interviewed her minutes after she found out that her son had been killed. Mm-hmm. So not articulate, not because she wasn't articulate, because she's, you know, just grieving and crying and screaming and angry. And my first reaction was, well, the police had to be correct. I mean, they don't just shoot people. Mm. But then I stopped and I'm like, well, hold on. There's a spokesperson who has no connection to this who can obviously be calm and rational. So, you know, I went to graduate school and all that stuff. So rationality and, you know, reason. And then in the show, in this poor mom who's just lost her child and should be, you know, out of her mind. And so for the first time, I sort of peeled the covers back and I'm like, you know, I don't think that was an accident by the news to show it that way. I mean, that was part of what they're trying to get the message across. So it's that point where you're like, you know, pull back the covers a little bit on all these reactions that you have and question them. So why are you having those reactions? Mm-hmm. Why are you scared of this person and not scared of this person? Or for me, you know, authority was a big thing. So never questioned authority, ever. I don't ever remember being afraid of a police officer once in my life. And I know that's not the case with friends. And, you know, to think about, and we're going to talk about this more, you know, to think about, you know, a common occurrence where you have to be scared for your own life, is something I've never experienced. So that whole thing, obviously I'm not black. And to try to put myself in the shoes of an African-American person and what they've gone through, including some of the stuff that you shared, is difficult for me. And that's why I sometimes feel that I pull back, because I feel like I'm in no position to speak here. But that doesn't mean that I can't do. And that's what I got to start doing a little bit more of.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I totally commend that that perspective. But the flip side, you know, to that is you do have the perspective of growing up in that household. Like, I mean, that's what makes allyship so powerful is, you know, you understand, A, you model the example of someone who can transcend that space. Like, you know, you grew up immersed in that space, exposed, and you had a choice. Like, you could have easily looked at that situation and said, wow, here's a situation where, you know, if I keep quiet, I can maintain privilege, I can, you know, continue to move forward and, you know, just lean into it. Or, you know, I can acknowledge that it's wrong and seek to grow and evolve and figure out how to remedy the problem. So that's a decision that, you know, and I'm pretty sure that's a decision that has brought you conflict as well as that growth, and a separation from, you know, people that, you know, you knew, grew up with, you know, loved, were friends, colleagues, you know, family, all that. And so that's a burden that I don't have, because pretty much when I speak about these things and we talk about these things, you know, and I'm speaking with my, you know, friends and family who I grew up with, you know, I'm speaking to the choir, right? You know, case in point, your message, you know, about, you know, dealing with law enforcement, you know, and, you know, I received the talk growing up. My dad was an attorney, you know, in the Midwest, you know, in Kansas. And so, you know, when I started driving, you know, I was taught basically, like, you know, whenever you get pulled over by the cops, hands at 10 and 2, you know, don't make any, you know, movements. Yes, sir. No, sir. I was conditioned to look at authority as, you know, something to be respected. And so it does paint the narrative for both sides. So whenever you're looking at someone who's been shot, you know, you're saying, you know, the cops don't, you get this knee-jerk reaction. He must have done something wrong, because the cops don't just do that. I had that same conditioning too. Like, he must not have had his hands at 10 and 2. I mean, that's what happens when you don't have your hands at 10 and 2. And we don't think, we aren't conditioned in this country to look at that as, you know, a violation of rights. You know, the authority is always right. The person who is having justice meted out to them is the one, you know, who is supposed to be wrong.
Before I got into higher ed, I worked a variety of jobs, including being a bartender at this sports bar in the Midwest, and it was a hangout for police officers. Mm-hmm. So you get them a little drunk, and they start sharing a little bit more, and you're like,
start hearing the real truth.
Damn, that's and it's, you know, just these big generalities, and really made me uncomfortable. And those are those moments where it opened my eyes. Mm-hmm. But I'm still, you know, at that point, at least struggling with, you said, you know, overcoming it, but it's still that point of, you know, when do you stand up? And that's the part that, when I say privilege, I've had the privilege of not having to stand up.
Gotcha. 'Cause
my 10 and 2 was, and yes, sir, no, sir, was so I could, might be able to get out of the ticket versus mm-hmm. worrying about, you know, anything mm-hmm. else. It was just, you know, if you're nice and polite and everything, they might actually not give you a ticket. It was never any conversation about, you know, worrying about your safety or anything. Yeah. So
you may not walk out of this. Gotcha. So, I mean, yeah, no, that's a great share, and appreciate it. I guess the next one is a group that we both know and love.
Yep.
Run the Jewels. So the song that we chose is a song called Close Your Eyes and Count the Fuck, which, you know, is intentionally inflammatory, and you should rush out and listen to this song immediately, but not, you know, just for the, it's a hip hop group, so it's not just for the beats and stuff. Focus on the lyrics. That's the main reason why I love them. That's the main reason why I know you love them. But the line from the song that stood out was, conditions create a villain. The villain is given vision. The vision becomes a vow to seek vengeance on all of the vicious. They keeping me from my chiller. Conditions create a villain. The villain is given vision. The vision becomes a vow to seek vengeance on all the vicious. Liars and politicians, profiteers of the prisons, the forehead engravers, enslavers of men and women, including members of clergy that rule on you through religion.
So strip your kids to the nude and then tell them God will forgive them.
So in this song, there, it also features Zach De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine, yep. another group that I definitely was influenced by growing up. But we're talking about systemic oppression, systemic violence, which is a key issue that, you know, we've been talking about back and forth in regard to dealing with law enforcement, you know, the authorities in general, the government in general. And as we're talking about protests, we're talking about resistance to those predatory forces that seek to exploit us, you and I individually. We're, despite, you know, our different backgrounds, we recognize that there are things outside of us. There are entities outside of us. There are individuals outside of us that do not seek what's in our best interest. And so this song is this, not just a song, but this group in general is extremely unifying in that they are constantly calling and pointing out that which facilitates that division. So, I mean, this is one Run the Jewels song that I love, but there are many. So, you know, what, as far as this song, what does it speak to you, Chris?
Well, it's just the, you know, the just the in-your-face anger and fighting back, and there's others too. You know, we talked about Just as a possible song, also with Zach on, you know, singing on that one, and just to me, it's the you know, and to my love of Run the Jewels is. I've gone back. Like, when I get into a group, I get all into a group. But it's only been for a couple of years I've been listening to them. It was actually from a podcast. I think it was a PBS, you know, Music of the Way. I forget what it was. But they played a couple of their songs as, you know, as a new album, and talking about sort of modern protest songs, mm-hmm. dealing with everything that's going on in America at the time. And I was like, holy shit, I got to listen to these guys. So, but this one... those are the two that it came down to for me is Just and Close Your Eyes and Count the Fuck. And again, it's just this idea. And I think it sometimes angers people. I mean, we're going to talk about it in one of our next podcasts about how different groups respond and, you know, who wouldn't be fighting if these, you know, mm-hmm. if these are the, you know, if I had to worry about my life, you know, every time I got pulled over, and I've been pulled over many times. I'm thinking I would have been receiving a much different message from my father or my mother. And I think that's a lot of this is, you know, it's time to stand up and make a difference.
Facts. And yeah, and I mean, what drew me to Run the Jewels initially wasn't the group itself. I was actually familiar with Killer Mike because of his connection to the Dungeon family. Outcast, you know, down in Atlanta, Georgia. And so, you know, Killer Mike, his father was a police officer. And so he made numerous songs about, you know, the corruption of, you know, law enforcement because, you know, his dad was a good cop. And because his dad was a good cop, he knew what bad cops, you know, were. And so he put that political messaging into a bunch of his songs. So I actually became familiar with Killer Mike around the same time that I encountered Dead Prez, you know, in college. And whenever he teamed up with LP to make, you know, Run the Jewels, you know, that political messaging, you know, just became that much more amplified. And, you know, I love the way that, you know, they both use their respective backgrounds to highlight, you know, systemic injustice. So, you know, and you know, of course, bringing Zach in for this song obviously is going to take it to a whole nother level. But yeah, I mean, it is an embodiment of allyship.
Yeah,
the whole group is.
Well, and I think that's why I'm excited about this because I don't want to spoil the surprise, but we were planning for one of the other podcasts, and you came up with an artist that I love, and I was just blown away. Not that you would be into them, but I'm excited because both of us, I probably don't have as wide of a spectrum as I think I do, but I think between the two of us, we're going to introduce a lot of different types of music and messages to our listeners. So I'm excited to see where we go with this.
And that was another thing we talked about too. So, I mean, going back full circle to the beginning of the podcast, one thing that we had discussed was putting out playlists of, you know, what we're listening to, what we featured in the podcast, you know, what are our audiences listening to, because we want this to be, you know, we want this to be a vehicle for connection,
right,
you know, for feedback. We're not telling you what to listen to. Yeah. We're not telling you that your favorite group is garbage and this one's better. You know, we're trying to build connection and it's very, very common to, you know, share that. So we had a conversation about sharing, you know, a Spotify playlist, you know, but some way, somehow we're going to get music to the people and we're going to receive music from the people and we're going to build connections
and through that. Neither of us is going to pretend to be, you know, experts in music or the history of music. There are, and, you know, I'm hoping throughout the podcast we can share names, but there are plenty of people at Duke who study this stuff and write about it. And hopefully, you know, we're on long enough that we can share some of those names. But all we can really do is talk about our own personal experience and how it's impacted us. And then hopefully involve the community, particularly the Diversify IT community, to see what's important to them. And then hopefully do an episode or two on those topics.
Facts. And we're also trying to bring we're trying to bring members of the community in. Like, you know, even though it's just you and I here in this intro podcast, we would love to have members of the community come in, people who have experience, you know, in music creation, music production, music, you know, they make music themselves. We want to build this out to grow the community and celebrate, you know, the connection that music brings to us all. So like you said, neither one of us is, you know, a composer extraordinaire, but, you know, I'm very, very good at listening to music. I know what notes sound like.
I know very little about music other than what I like. And
exactly.
I'm often driven by lyrics, which is a lot of what we're going to talk about.
Facts on facts.
So, and I didn't mean to say, I know you're more musical than I am, but the main point here is that, you know, we're not experts here. This is just about us sharing what we do know and hoping that it connects with somebody.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, that's episode.
Till the next one, man.
Yeah, that's it. That's episode one. Episode 000.
Hit it.
The audacity of this pitch.